We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family, Rocket can. All right, so what's curious to me is you come off a segment like that, and Yogi Roth is a really interesting person. This is why there's some people that we bring on the show, and we bring them on a few times a year or even more, because I know what I'm going to get. I'm going to get great insight, great energy. I'm going to get a guy who loves the game, who knows the game, who's well-sourced, well-connected. He played the game. He's a good friend. Like, Yogi always works. So you come off a week where the college game is just wild, and the carousel is spinning furiously, and guys are moving, and we're talking about what's right and what's wrong, and is it good for the game or not? What about the players? What do the coaches owe these players in their programs? Are these guys scumbags? Are they doing what anybody would do in their position? Like, these are all really important topics. Is the system broken or not? How do you go about fixing it? So Yogi is a really good guy to have on. So what's the reaction to that? Nothing but RAF references. Now, I admit, I did tease the possibility of Mike Glennon playing. I also admit it is extraordinarily coincidental that when I ask Yogi about the Pac-12, because he's intimately involved with that conference, that he should mention out of nowhere, but not out of nowhere. That's my point also about this. It wasn't out of nowhere. He mentioned Merton Hanks. I love Merton Hanks. I'm trying to remember. I was at, was it the Super Bowl or the AFC title game? I don't remember, strangely. But I saw Merton Hanks, and we had a moment. And I hadn't talked to him in years, but I loved him as a player with the 49ers, and I loved talking to him on the show. And one of my favorite things about being in this game, as long as I've been in this game, are these relationships that I have with people that I used to talk to back in the day, and that I can kind of connect. You know, I'm kind of taken by a podcast I did with Christy Martin. Christy Martin story is wild. It's an amazing pod. You should go find that. And she was part of the Netflix doc series. And she came on, and I had this great moment with Christy where she said that when the request came through that Jim Rome wanted to talk to her, she's like, Rome? Yeah, I'm doing that. And Christy Martin and I haven't talked in 15 years. And, you know, I don't want to speak for Christy, but it's like those friends that you have that you can go weeks, months, even years without talking about. And then if you pick up the phone or you see them at a reunion, you can pick right up. Those are how you know the real people and the real friends in your life. And I've got a lot of associations professionally. I'm not saying socially or friend-wise, but professionally, where if I haven't spoken to somebody in a long, long time, I can see them and we can have a moment and we can pick right up. Merton Hanks was one of those guys. I saw him walking on the field before a game, and I hadn't spoken to him in a long time, and he kind of gave me, like, you know, the nod. Like, yo, Rome, good to see you, man. What's up? And, like, words weren't even exchanged, but there was a moment there. I thought it was awesome. And so what do I get coming out of an interview like that, a great interview like that? A bunch of bullcrap. Stucknut, for instance, quote, ding, he's got a bell emoji. Ding. Merton Hanks mention at Macho Nacho 45. Look at Yogi getting a jump start on the RAF fam segment, dropping a Merton Hanks name. That's not what he did. He was not, I guarantee Yogi doesn't even know about the non-existent RAF fam. I guarantee it. I mean, I could be wrong, because Yogi knows me and he knows the show, but he's got way more important things to do than listen to the show 3 hours a day. And in order to know about a family that does not even exist, JTP, he would have to listen 3 hours a day. So no, he was not getting in front of anything. He was not getting a head start on it. Yogi did not hear me talk about the Giants and Glennon and think, I'm going to slide this in. No, what he was saying is Merton Hanks is a real asset to what they're trying to build there now. And that he loved Merton back in the day because he grew up as a Niners fan. That's where he went with that. So stop making assumptions, especially ones that are wrong. At Kurt Orban test, which is also a strong handle. That's an underrated handle that does not get enough love. Kurt Orban. At Kurt Orban test, quote, if I crane my neck just right, I swear I heard you talk about Merton Hanks. Regards, Giraffe Glennon. Merton Hanks was a damn good player, a damn good teammate, a lead from the front kind of guy, a ball hawk, a playmaker. Guy spent a lot of time in the film room. Man, you better put respect on him. Don't you dare come in here and do my guy Merton Hanks like that. I'm not having it, yo. I'm not playing. I wish I were on TV because you could see the look on my face. I ain't playing. I'm starting to speak like James Kelly. That's how angry I'm getting with this. I'm not playing. 1 for 3, C1. War Merton Hanks being a charter member of the Giraffe family. Signed, Mike Glennon. Let me tell you something, Carl. Dude, I am this close to blocking your ass. And you're 1 for 3, C1. My analytics suggest, Carl, that you hit me up on this show 15 times a day. I am 15 seconds from blocking your ass. Don't do it, dude. It's not worth it. Ask yourself, Carl. Ask yourself, is it worth getting blocked?
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it, dude. You know how I feel about Merton Hanks. It's not worth it. Where are you going to take these stupid references? What other show is going to give you the platform that I can give you? It's not worth it. At JC in Calgary, what are we talking about next segment, Jimmo's? Signed, the Raff family. I'm not playing this game. There is no Raff family. The way this came to be, I don't want to belabor this point. I want to get back on track and get back to my show and talk sports. If you're just listening and you want to know what this is and it's your standard criticism about Rome, this is why I can't listen to your show. It's too inside. What the hell are you talking about with the, quote, Raff family? Quickly. Back in the day, there was a rat family. I found a number of athletes and coaches that look like rats. Didn't act like rats, but physically look like rats. No names mentioned, Corey Pavin. Look it up. He looked like a rat. No other names mentioned. Zane Smith looked like a rat. No names mentioned. Emo Fittipaldi looked like a rat. No names mentioned. Monica Seles looked like a rat. I mean, I'm not doing this. Gary Gaetti, rat. I mean, if I played that game today, yep, maybe Chris Taylor, I guess. But we're not playing that game anymore. So I made it clear, like over and over and over again, year after year after year, I regret it. I mean, I kind of don't even regret it, to be honest. It's just something I did. We all make mistakes. And maybe it wasn't even a mistake. It was appropriate then. It's no longer appropriate now. I tried to get it scrubbed from the internet. I couldn't. So I have to own it. So then some of you geniuses try to figure out, all right, Rome, we get it. Times have changed. You have changed. You have evolved. You have matured. It's not cool to call people rats. Why don't we then replace the rat family with the Raff family? You know, a kinder, gentler family. You're not saying people look like rats. You're saying they have elongated necks. And there are some athletes and people in sports that have longer than average necks. No names mentioned. Mike Glennon's neck is long as hell. But who has any say over that? It's not his fault. And it's not even a bad thing. He can see over opposing rushers. It's good. But y'all want to have a Raff family, which brings me back to my guy, Mert. You want to put Mert and Hanks in the family. A family that doesn't freaking exist. I'm trying to do a talk show here. I'm trying to put food on the table. I'm trying to get my kids to college. You're making it more difficult. All right, that said, there's your reset. Your explanation, your reset, your reboot. Back to the show if you don't mind. Give me back my... Dear Jim, So let me get this straight. During the baseball lockout, nothing will happen. And it could drag on forever. How is that any different than normal? Signed, Casey in New Hampshire. War me tapping into my inner David Goggins and watching an entire MLB game. You got a good point, Case. How is that any different? Jims, there is no way Cliff Kingsbury would leave his NFL job to take the OU job. I, on the other hand, am more than willing to decommit to Jacksonville in order to check out the quality of Oklahoma co-eds versus the level that I'm accustomed to in other college towns. Yours truly, Pervin Liar.
Get out of Dodge.
Vince in Illinois. You'd be hard-pressed to find a better handle than Pervin Liar. I'm sure he doesn't feel that way, but the rest of us do. And you know why it's such a good handle? It's fair. I mean, and it rhymes. Urban Meyer, Pervin Liar. It rhymes and it fits.
Heartbreaking.
Let's break that down for a minute. Is there anything unfair about Pervin? No. We've all seen the vid. Is there anything unfair about Liar? No. We've heard the lies. Does it rhyme with Urban Meyer? Sounds like it does to me.
That's devastating.
It's kind of like no tippin' pippin'. Pervin Liar. At CDN Postie for Life, quote, when you're running behind on your day and the first thing you hear is a bonus big head bet segment, that makes things all better now. Yeah, you say that, Kevin, until he gives you a bad pick. And then you're all up in his mentions.
Which doesn't put the-
Ryan in Sacktown wants in, quote, what time is the Forrest Gump bet segment? Wore the Garrett Rich Show, referencing Lieutenant Dan, not being a coincidence.
Tom Hanks went belly up as well, so.
The Queen is in. Hi, Jim. SJP. Haiku. All right, now here's a degree of difficulty. Let's see if she can land this. SJP Haiku. This is happening. It doesn't make any sense. Big head on Thursday. And she signed it, ready to get down. Bella B in Calgary.
Get down.
That's why she's the queen.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening.
Look what she did. I've made the point that Bella B loves the big head bet segment. More she participates. Close. Not only is she into it, she turned it into a haiku. Not only did she turn it into a haiku, she turned it into an SJP haiku. If I'm using something or I find something useful or usable that is SJP related, how good is that? Well done, Bella. She's nailed that. Perfect landing. Dear Alvy, don't get sassy with Rome. You don't want an adult to wash your mouth out with soap. Trust me. Regards, Eli Manning.
So you go to Philly, I mean, you're getting the double bird right away from a 9-year-old kid.
Signs you off in Lincoln.
The bird. I don't know. Can we do that? Can you? I'm sure you can blur that out, right?
Unwar, do you kiss your mother with that mouth? Great point. I got a question. It may be inappropriate, but it's old school. You know that phrase? Is it just a figure of speech? Or do people actually, or have they ever actually had their mouth washed out with soap? Chalk has. Like as an example, if you go 4-letter bomb when you're a kid, did either your mother or father grab your tongue, yank on it, and then hit it with a bar of lava? Is that a real thing? And is it a bar of soap or is it just soft soap? Or is it dish soap? Just wondering. Is it a figure of speech? Or do people really get their mouths washed out with soap? Chris and Fondy tweets, Jim, you should name your horse Show Fodder. That's not bad. We can do better, but that's not bad. All right, so when we return, I do have an interview for you. And not just any interview, but the head basketball coach at the Ohio State. Chris Holtman, that's coming up next. Then the big head, top of the hour. Quick timeout. Holidays are here, and so is fashionable fitness. Gift yourself a Samsung Galaxy Z Flip 3 5G. It's a phone that folds in half to literally stand on its own. You can pair it with the Galaxy Watch 4 for ultimate wellness and wow factor. Check health stats. Flex personal records. Over 90 activities can be tracked, like biking, swimming, golfing, and more. Invest in yourself with tech made to crush goals. Holidays open up with Galaxy. Shop it all at Samsung.com. 5G connection and availability may vary. Check with carrier. Products are sold separately.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Top of the hour, the Big Head. Big Head Bets. But first things first, we are joined right now by the head basketball coach at Ohio State. Fifth year with the Buckeyes. He was the conference coach of the year in three different conferences. Led Ohio State to 20-plus wins every season he's been there and to the last three NCAA tournaments. Led the Buckeyes to a 71-66 win over top-ranked Duke on Tuesday night. Ohio State's 5-2. They're at Penn State on Sunday. Their head coach, of course, is Chris Holtmann. He joins us once again. Chris, great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Uh-oh! I had him, then I lost him. But in a way, it's okay, because I love this song. And so does Dana White. Speaking of Dana White, Dana White is my guest on episode 200 of the Jim Rome Podcast, which is live right now. Don't listen to it right now, but listen to it after the program. After that awesome introduction, I lost my guest, but I found him. He's back right now. Chris Holtmann is the coach at Ohio State. Chris, good to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, great to be with you, Jim. Hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing great. Good to have you back. Thanks so much. So you had a huge win over number one Duke on Tuesday. Early in the second half, Chris, you were down 15. What kind of thoughts were you having in that moment, and what was your message to your team?
You know, really, it was as simple as kind of win the play in front of us. You know, they're really good. You know, obviously they're number one in the country for a reason. They've got some older guys. Duke has some older guys, and they've got some, you know, they've got obviously a lottery pick in Paolo. So, you know, I felt like if we could get it within two possessions in the last, you know, 4 minutes at home, we'd have a chance. You know, it's a little bit different playing on the road, but we really did just focus in on kind of winning the possession in front of us. Our guys did that. They didn't get rattled, and we ended up pulling it out.
All right, so they did exactly that, and the big picture is, what's it say about this group that you guys did come back from down 15 in the second half on the number one team in the country, and then you closed that game out with a 12-0 run? How much did that show you about your team?
I tell you, Jim, it's been crazy. We've had a wild opening seven games because four of them have went down to the final possession, and you don't normally have that. Now, we played a hard schedule. We played a number of NCAA tournament teams, but I think what that says to me and what I've learned about this group is we've got a pretty tough-minded group, and you know, you got to build that as the season goes on, especially playing in the Big Ten. But I think we have a pretty tough-minded group. We answered the bell. You know, again, it's different playing at home. It was sold out, as you'd expect, playing the number one team in the country and playing Duke. Our crowd certainly helped us.
Chris Holtmann's joining us. Chris, I think what you just said is really, really important in the sense that Duke was the last in a run of three ranked teams in 8 days. That's a really tough challenge early in the season, something that I think a lot of head coaches would not want, especially given the grind that your conference is. So what do you think your team took away from that three-game stretch, and then what's the thinking and scheduling it like that?
You know what? I've had some second thoughts on it because we're down our second leading scorer, who played early but has had some groin issues. So I really had some thought. Hey, with a young backcourt, we have one of our a new backcourt. One of our guys is with the Indiana Pacers right now. Left a year early, so did I overschedule? But if I'm going to err, Jim, I'm always going to try to err on playing really challenging non-conference games. You know, it might mean we drop a couple. And I think hopefully that prepares us for what the Big Ten is and hopefully for postseason. You know, in our league, Tom Izzo's done that for years. He's done it for years. He's not afraid to play anybody, anywhere. I think that toughens your team, and I appreciate it, but I'm not, you know, I'll be honest with you, in private moments, I had some second thoughts.
I appreciate that, too. Ohio State head basketball coach Chris Holtman's my guest. Let me ask you about Coach K. Like, Mike Krzyzewski is retiring at the end of the season. When you look at this man's career and everything that he's accomplished, what sticks out to you the most about him?
You know, I think the consistency and longevity of his success. I mean, he's won 5 national championships, 12 Final Fours. I think what has made him legendary, and probably, you know, he'll go down as one of the best coaches in any sport, is his ability to relate to kids at all different generations. You know, he's went from doing it one way early in his career to adapting how he's recruiting and playing, to also transitioning to coaching pros on the Olympic team. You know, to be able to do that, you have to be, I think, really, really gifted to be able to relate and communicate the way he does. And it was my first time coaching against him. It's unique. I've coached against a lot of guys and, you know, a lot of Hall of Famers. First time coaching against him. And it was an honor, honestly, to do it.
That's really interesting, actually. We're talking to Chris Holtman. You know, when you and I spoke back in January, we talked about E.J. Liddell and his impact on the program. He had 14 points and 11 rebounds against Duke. How much has his game grown, even from when you and I spoke in January until today?
It's really grown. I tell you, the kids, what he's done is he went through the NBA process, which a lot of guys do. You know, he had a terrific sophomore year. Processing got, I think, feedback that was important, but also he understood kind of what I think he went into it understanding, hey, I've got some things I got to get better with. He's a player, you got to have good self-awareness, and he does. He understands he had to continue to grow. He came back, he's been our most consistent worker, he's improved on his conditioning, number one, his fitness level, and being able to play on the perimeter. The guy has almost 30 blocks through 7 games, and he's really been able to come from out on the perimeter and impact shots around the rim. He's a unique matchup because he's 6'7 with a 6'11 wingspan, can take you play inside, play outside. He's going to have a phenomenal career. I really believe it's a really good long career in the NBA. He's just got to continue to keep getting better.
All right, so Chris, you mentioned the feedback that he received about his NBA prospects. Speaking of feedback, last season, after you dropped a game to Illinois, your mother, Patty, sent you a text, which read, quote, "Chris, I noticed that the boys in the Illinois game were shooting flat-footed, just using upper body. Just take it for what it's worth. I just noticed the others engage their legs," end quote. What an amazing text. What was your reaction when you received that text from your mother?
A bit of an eye roll, to be honest with you, because she likes to send those texts on the regular. Like somehow I just decided not to watch the previous Illinois game and couldn't recognize that myself. But, you know, she's a mom and she, you know, but I thought that became public. I kind of put that out on social media. I thought that'd be fun. I thought that might slow down some of the texts on corrections we need to make. It hadn't slowed it down at all. As a matter of fact, I got one after the Duke game. And, we grew up in Lexington, Kentucky. So she grew up watching college basketball. So she loves it. And because she's watched it throughout her life, I think she feels like maybe she has some opinions she'd like to share. And she doesn't mind sharing them.
Or maybe she thinks that she knows more than you and knows better than you. And, Coach, maybe she's right. Ask her. I had a father who he passed away, but he was the exact same way. I get this. I know what you're saying. Chris, let me ask you, if you don't mind, I want to ask you about Paul Patterson. He coached you at Taylor University. He passed away. For those who do not know him, what was he like as a person?
Well, Jim, I really appreciate you asking about him. He was my college coach, and for those of us that have had, you know, mentors, and I'm sure you have one, for me, he was everything to the guys that play for him. It was some of the hardest years of my life playing for him. There was nobody more demanding He's a guy that when I first became a Division I head coach, he would call me. He was still working at the time. He would call me 2 to 3 times a week just to check in on me. He did that well into my time at Gardner-Webb and into Butler days and even in my first year before he became ill with Alzheimer's, my first year here at Ohio State. So, it means a lot that you would ask. I really appreciate it. It's just a reminder of how one person, if he really is about other people, how much they can impact lives.
Really quickly then, as a follow, Chris, you've said that he would be brutally honest and he was uncompromising and he was not ever going to stand for arrogance. When you talk back to him one time, just one time, what was his response to you?
Yeah, it was right in the middle of it was halftime. He ripped me. I turned it over right before we were playing in California. I turned it over right before halftime. That was never a good thing to do when you play for him, because you knew walking into the locker room you were going to get it. And normally you had to take it right between the eyes and deal with it. For that day, for whatever reason, I wasn't trying to hear it. You're a 19, 20 year old kid, and I had a smart aleck response, and he immediately came back and said, "Hey, you're not good enough to talk back to me." And I didn't know how to respond. Honestly, I just kind of shut up and said, "Okay, all right, I guess that that's going to be the end of this conversation." But he had a way. He never swore, but he had a way of saying stuff that would kind of pierce you in a really honest way. And at the end of the day, looking back on it, I appreciate it. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I appreciated it afterwards and appreciate it now for sure.
Hey, listen, I'm not saying that you were right to do so, but when he says to you, "You're not good enough to talk back to me," were you not the best player on the team? Were you not an all-conference player when you said that?
Yeah, I was an All-American, yeah. I was actually, we had a backcourt buddy who was better, but yeah, I was an All-American, but I didn't feel like giving him my resume at that point, Jim. I just felt like at that point I needed to zip up.
Yeah, that's great. It, by the way, Coach, not only am I good enough to do it, I'm the best player you've ever had. Yeah, that might not have gone, it might have felt good in the moment, but not so great. All right, so Chris, really quickly, you've got a few days off before you face Penn State. What is the focus for you and the players between now and Sunday? Another big game.
Really turning the page. I think it's the biggest challenge for teams. You see it all across college basketball. Games come at you quickly. You don't have a week off like you do in football. You have to rest up, turn the page. Listen, my press conference got over at 12:30 the night of the game. So you know how the players were still energized and feeling that yesterday. And again, we expected to play well, but I think we need to turn the page to a Penn State team that we've struggled with, that is good, well-coached. It's a conference game. It's our first conference game. It's on the road. We need to be ready and prepared for that, and a lot of that depends on the leadership of our group.
That's coming up fast. Ohio State at Penn State. That's Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Ohio State's 5-2, coming off that big win, but you just heard it from the coach. Got to turn the page. Chris, appreciate you very much. Love the energy. Love the conversation, and always good to have you on this talk show. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, it's always great being with you, Jim. All the best.
You too. Chris, all the best. Great to have you back. Chris Holtmann, head basketball coach at Ohio State. All right, then. That's good stuff. I like that. Good to change up on you. I mean, when I say change up, I mean just keep moving. When I say change up, I mean get off of the family that does not exist. When I say change up. Top of the hour, the big head, James Kelly. Trying to get more out of him than I'm getting out of him, which is 10 minutes a week out of him. He'll be on tomorrow, too. We're going to run that back. Clones, do not miss this Sunday, December 5th, 8 p.m. live, pay-per-view. Gervonta Tank Davis takes on Isaac Pitbull Cruz from Baltimore, Maryland. Really good matchup now. 27-year-old Davis is making his third straight pay-per-view headlining appearance with a record at 25-0, 24 by knockout. He's a star. Isaac Pitbull Cruz, known for his aggressive come-forward style, is a 23-year-old from Mexico City, Mexico, and he is 22-1-1 overall, 15 by KO. Cruz added 2 more wins in 21, including a win over former champ Francisco Vargas in June. So you want to lock this one in. Sunday, 8 p.m., the unbeaten 5-time world champ boxing's hottest attraction, Gervonta Tank Davis, defending his lightweight title against hard-hitting Isaac Pitbull Cruz. It is a can't-miss pay-per-view event. Davis is a generational talent. He's getting better, and he's going up against a hard-hitting and hard-nosed Cruz. It's an explosive showdown. It is Sunday. This Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Halfway through it, I'm Jim Rome. A very good Thursday to you. I'm live. I'm in Southern California. Top of the hour, we're talking about the matchup tonight with the big head, James Kelly, Big Head Betts. But right now, we are joined by a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Stephanie Apstein joins me. Stephanie, nice to have you back. How are you?
Hey, fine, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. So thank you for doing this. And the last time you were on, we were talking about all that, quote, stuff the pitchers were putting on baseballs. Today we could be talking about free agency. We could talk about Max Scherzer in New York, all sorts of things. But instead, there is a lockout. And we can get into this. But let me first ask you, as the deadline was approaching, did you have any hope that there would not be a lockout, that somehow we could avoid this? Or was it inevitable and guaranteed in your mind?
I think it was inevitable. There was no progress at all in the final hours. I mean, you probably saw they bargained for about an hour total the day before. There was just no particular sense that this was going to happen, which
right.
was a bummer.
Yeah, it is. It is. Now, you've got an excellent piece up right now on SI.com about the lockout. And as you point out, teams have committed something in the neighborhood of $1.4 billion in free agency, more than $300 million more in extensions, and there have been numerous trades. I mean, it's been a really exciting November, and then it all just comes to an abrupt halt. Does it feel like the sport simply cannot get out of its own way?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the right way to describe it. The only reason we had this kind of mass movement was because they had this deadline in mind. So they couldn't even, you know, they couldn't even really operate in good faith without this standing over them, hanging over them rather. And it's just, it's another thing. You know, these players are better than ever. They're more exciting than ever. Their fans have more access to them than ever. And yet still they can't run with that. They just have to keep messing it up.
All right, so it's true. All these things are true. Like the games are intriguing in one sense. Like you've got guys doing things that have never been done before. We have Shohei Ohtani doing things that have never been done before.
Yeah.
But as you write, quote, this year's World Series and All-Star Games were the second lowest rated in history. Privately, executives and players alike call their sport, quote, unwatchable. All right, so that's something right there. That's really damning. On the inside, they admit it. It's unwatchable. So the natural question would be, how much of these negotiations are actually about making the sport more watchable?
Well, and that's what I find so frustrating, is that almost none of them is the answer to that question. They, as of a couple hours before the deadline, nobody had even presented a comprehensive rules proposal. They're so busy arguing about the money that they have sort of forgotten that people are going to stop watching this game if it keeps taking 4 hours and everybody just strikes out all the time.
Do you get the sense that the league, the people who matter, the owners, have a good understanding or even care what the fans want, or are they just focused on maximizing revenue for themselves?
I think it's the latter. I think the players are a little more tuned into what fans want. I think they're a little more accessible. They have to hear about it on social media in a way that owners do not. They have to talk to us every day, so they're hearing, you know, even if they don't read anything, they hear from our questions what people are talking about, whereas owners can go a full year without ever communicating with fans. And so I think you really start to see that issue at times like this, when the owners just dig in their heels and sort of take their position to the cost of everybody else.
know what's really strange about this, Stephanie? He's like, I want to get into it and the nuts and bolts and some of the things that they want to negotiate, but I can hear fans just tuning out like they don't want to hear it. They really do not want to hear it. There's some actual issues. Right, exactly. Like, I want to ask you about these things, but I don't want to ask you about these things. But, like, just generally speaking, like, is there more money? Isn't there more money for everybody if they can make the pie bigger instead of arguing about how to cut the existing one?
Yes, there is. And in part because this is not they don't have a hard salary cap, so they don't have to negotiate about which percentage of baseball-related revenue goes to our players, the way you see in the NBA, for example, which means that the owners don't have to necessarily show all of their books. But these guys have made a ton of money. I mean, perhaps you've noticed every new ballpark basically has a shopping mall around it now, and that land is all owned and developed by the owners of the teams. So between that, between TV rights, I mean, gate receipts are still high. I don't know if anybody's tried to buy a beer or a hot dog at a ballpark recently. They're still making a lot of money. And so it does start to look, I think, pretty distasteful and pretty I would not say anybody's looking very sympathetic right now as they complain about how many millions and billions of dollars they are owed.
Well, so let me ask you this. Like, there's not a hard cap, as you point out, but what there is a competitive balance tax. The owners would tell you that so-called CBT is not a salary cap, but when you look at the punishments for going over the threshold, does it effectively work as a salary cap without being technically a salary cap?
Yeah, it does. And that's the union's position, and I would agree with the union on this one, that it functions as a salary cap. And you can see it in that, for example, the punishments get worse the more times you exceed it, and so no team, since they made these punishments worse, has blown by it in three straight years. And that means that's the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox. None of these guys are willing to blow by it more than twice because they start losing, they start getting taxed like 50 cents on the dollar, which they don't want to pay. They start to lose draft picks, which they don't want. And so the penalties really do a good job of reining in spending, which, you know, of course the owners are perfectly happy to do, but the players, and I think a lot of team executives as well, are a little bit frustrated at how many teams become unwilling to shell out the extra dollars for free agents.
Right. So what about the game itself? A couple of things really quickly before you go. One of the topics is the universal DH. Now, how likely is that? And then how would that impact the game?
I think that one will happen. I think a lot of fans might be upset about it, and I like having one league do it. I like having the league separate, but everybody's sort of on board with this. Nobody really wants to watch pitchers try to hit, is what the owners believe. They feel like fans are more likely to tune in to watch a DH. The players like it because it's more money. A DH will get more money than the last guy on the bench, and that opens up the markets. So I think that one is going to happen. That won't hold up a deal. Something like a pitch clock, which I think is sorely needed. The league can implement something like that on its own if it gives them enough notice. Manfred has said he would prefer to collectively bargain it, which he should. I mean, the players, I think, should have some say in the rules of the game. But again, all of this stuff should be the first thing we talk about, not the last thing, you know?
Right. Now, what about the suggestion of expanding the postseason from 10 teams to 14 teams? What do you think about that idea?
I don't like that one because I think that why would you spend to get to 95 wins when 85 will get you into the tournament? And I think the union will probably eventually give in because that's more money for everybody. They're using it as a bargaining chip. But when you look at this sort of era of tanking and non-competitive nature, that started around the time they added the second wild card because it doesn't really pay to get to 92 anymore. And so you can try to do it at 88. And so I think the unintended consequences of that one are going to be a lot greater than either side is giving it credit for.
So, Stephanie, if the sport itself is unwatchable, and it's not you or me saying that necessarily, but even the people within the game.
Yeah, I hear that word all the time.
Right? So if it's unwatchable, how much damage could you see the lockout doing to a product and a sport that's already unwatchable?
I think a ton. I think the owners, and let's be clear, I mean, both sides have some responsibility for the toxicity, but the owners are the ones who implemented a lockout. And I think the owners are really sort of taking for granted fans' interest in the sport. I don't think people are tied to it in the way that maybe they are hoping. And I think that they better figure this out quickly or else you're going to start to see people. There's a lot of other stuff to look at, you know?
Always. And then quickly, will they figure it out quickly? How long do you think it lasts?
I think we'll be doing this for a couple of weeks, maybe months. I don't think they'll lose games, but right now there's no more urgency today than there is a month from now. So given how unable they seem to be able to work anything out, I don't know why they would get it done today instead of a month from now.
Good times. She is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Stephanie Abstein, joining us. Stephanie, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Sorry, it was such a bummer.
No, I know it. We'll do it again. We'll do it again, and we'll talk about better, happier things, but I appreciate you doing your job, and we got to cover it. We got to do it. If those within the sport say that it's unwatchable, how bad is it? They're not saying what we don't already know. I'm saying those within the sport are acknowledging it and owning we have an unwatchable sport. So do we fix it? Now it's just lock everybody out and make it worse. When we return, the return of the big head, who's feeling very good about himself for showing up to work twice this week. Well, actually, it's not even fair. He hasn't shown up tomorrow yet, so he'll show up today. You've got a pretty interesting matchup tonight in Dallas and New Orleans. New Orleans with a quarterback switch. Dallas with the big fella, Mike McCarthy, out, and five other assistants, but their wide receivers are getting healthy. They get DeMarcus Lawrence back. We'll get into that matchup. I need to check the latest line, see which way the big head is leaning. A big head bed set or a big head bet segment. I mean, already I forgot how to talk, knowing that I'm going to talk to this guy. He's got that kind of effect on all of us. Stay tuned.